Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to a new Dome Theory. Been a couple weeks. NBA offseason rolling along. We do have the Olympics to keep us entertained, though, as well as baseball, which I've been enjoying a little bit this year. Stopping by some ballparks, moving across the country.
You have not been enjoying anything about baseball. Don't lie to us.
I've enjoyed the Sox season. They've been competitive, and that's all I always ask. But they've also infuriated me, as always, Taylor, and I hope the worst isn't to come. They lost 7-9 before last night's big win. So 7 out of 10, 3-7 following the break. Not what you want to see, but they're still squarely in that wild card mix. I think they have to make the playoffs this year, but we'll talk about that on the back end of the show. Trade deadline just passed around baseball. Dan Scott's here. He's got his Yankees adding, getting hot, beating the Red Sox finally after years of struggles. And Taylor's here. Taylor's here to talk a little Sox. But first, let's start with the biggest news of the summer. Since it is the summer, Tatum taking a DNP CD in Team USA versus Serbia. I'm surprised, Taylor. One, that he sat, and two, at the reaction to it. It became the story of the game, story of the week. Major scrutiny on Steve Kerr, who was already getting a little flack for the way the exhibitions went to begin this tournament slate. But Tatum, probably the first DNP CD of his life. I didn't look back at high school and all that for him, but just given his pedigree, the teams he's played on, who he's been throughout his career, especially into the NBA, he has never had to take a seat like this. And on this team, on this roster, in that matchup, even after what he did 3 years ago in the Olympics, they chose him, and Celtics fans were obviously pissed, but I felt like nationally people were like, what the hell, when they saw it too.
Yeah, I agree. I think so. The word that's been coming to me when I've been thinking about it, obviously I was as a Celtics fan, and especially as a Tatum fan, I was disappointed in it. Cause you know, you tune in to watch and it's like, you just see him sitting there on the bench, and it's different than Tyrese Halliburton not playing. Right. Like, it is different for those two guys, but the word that keeps
coming
to me. Because
he won the championship, or first team All-NBA, or just his
first team All-NBA, level. He's a champion. He was the second best player on the Olympic team 3 years ago. Like, there's a lot that goes into it, right? But the word that keeps coming to me is just lazy. I think it was very lazy for Steve Kerr to go to him before the game and say, hey, you're not going to play today. Because, like, it's like, well, okay, why? You know what I mean? Why? It, like, besides, like, being like, oh, I like the matchups, or to me, it just screams like, I don't want to figure this out. And we're obviously good enough to beat whoever we want to without, you know, I mean, they could have sat, if Bam sat, right, they would have been fine. If whoever sits, they would have been fine. And it's, you know, even if you sit LeBron or Curry or anyone like that, like, they weren't there 3 years ago and they still won gold. So it's,
you can't sit LeBron or Curry.
No. And I know, I'm not saying like, oh, they should have sat those two instead of Tatum. But what I'm saying is, like, they've won gold without those guys, right? So it's not like it's a life or death thing where if, like, LeBron doesn't play, they're not going to win this game, right? Like, that's not how it is. But I think it's lazy to go into the game and just eliminate that. I don't know if it, all the strings are you know, tied in a knot with all the Jaylen stuff and the Celtics stuff, because I mean, Drew and Derek White still played, you know, plenty. I mean, Tatum is a little more linked to Jaylen, and you have the whole Grant Hill saying it's a conspiracy theory, and then right before the game Jaylen tweets out like how he's disappointed in Grant Hill. But yeah, I just thought it was lazy. I knew Celtics fans like myself would react the way that, you know, we did, but I have been shocked to see the national response, like Stephen A like losing his mind over it. I didn't expect that at all. You know, other players being like, hey, this is crazy. Like, I saw Theo Pinson, and you know, however you feel about Theo Pinson is irrelevant. Yeah. And you know, I like Theo Pinson a lot, Tar Heel and everything, but he was like, it just doesn't make any sense for it to come out after the game that like Kerr went to Tatum before the game and was like, hey, you're just not playing today. Like, that feels crazy to me.
Yeah. And I knew he wouldn't have a huge role on this roster, Dan, given the forwards in front of him. LeBron's going to do what he does. He's leading this team, and I think he's earned it given the way he's played so far. Durant comes back, and he's Durant immediately, so there's no questions there. The craziest part about this, and I know Kerr said Tatum's going to play on Wednesday as we record this against South Sudan, it worked. The rotations worked. They won by 26. It was the most dominant win yet. So you can't look at it and say, oh, it was stupid, it didn't work, blew up in his face. They got what they wanted out of this. And Embiid hasn't played well. I think it's tough to compare Embiid and Tatum. Just positionally, they're in different spots on this roster. I do think they needed more centers against Serbia. So that'll probably change here against South Sudan. We'll see who actually takes a sit here. Windhorse was insinuating it would be Bam, which wouldn't be stunning. If you want to just go the all-star route, Dan, you could have sat White, which I felt like was going to be the game plan when he joined this roster, but he's actually played and been effective. So Tatum's going to play, right? But I don't know how much he's going to play even in this returning role.
Yeah, and I think it would have been a bigger story if Durant came out and struggled or if it was a closer game. But you look back, you say it worked. And I think another part is like easing Durant into things and getting him maybe looking at the matchups. They assumed it would have been a better matchup for him to get into the flow of the game, play with guys like White and Drew Holiday and other guys and see how he is on the court as opposed to bringing him in against South Sudan, which, you know, they're more athletic, they run around, and it could be tougher for them to try to integrate KD into the lineup that way. So I think I hear what Taylor's saying with it being lazy, but I think it also depends how does it go the rest of the way. And I think it accomplished the mission of bringing Durant into the lineup. And I think overall, from a Celtics fan perspective, you can be upset, you know, all NBA player, one of the best players on the roster, getting a DNP. It doesn't really make sense on paper, but I think you just got to trust the coach's judgment here and then see how it plays out the rest of the way. I think just looking from a talent perspective, seeing Bam sit next game, that wouldn't surprise me. I think obviously Tatum will get minutes, but how much will he play when you got guys like KD, like LeBron? And you have to think the original roster also had Kawhi. So I think at some point someone big was going to have to sit, assuming everyone was healthy. And unfortunately this game, it was Tatum.
And maybe that's why Kawhi ends up off the roster. I know there's some controversy around that after all the controversy we had about Jaylen. Taylor, what do you think about that?
I mean, do you want my real thoughts or do you want my podcast thoughts? Because
your real thoughts.
Real thoughts. I think it's complete bullshit what happened. You know what I mean? And I think it's even like the whole like, yeah, I felt like an idiot for not playing him by Steve Kerr and then being like, oh, but he's going to play on Wednesday. It's like, what is this? Like Little League? You know what I mean? Like, that's how it sounds. It's like, oh, sorry, sport. I didn't get you in there today, but I'll get you in for two innings on, you know, I'll get you in for two innings on Thursday. You know what I mean? That's what it feels like. And so it's just like, that's where it's like to me. And I understand that, like, it's a log jam, right? Positionally for him. You have LeBron and you have Durant at the forwards. And right. I get it. You know what I mean? And I think Tatum would understand that too. But for him to be the second best player on the last Olympic team. Like, everyone looks at Carmelo Anthony like this Team USA god, right? And that's what he was. But I don't know. It sits wrong with me that you have this guy who is, you know, according to voters, has been one of the, you know, top five players in the league for the last three seasons in a row. He just won a championship. And then before the game, the coach comes to him and says, hey, you're not going to play today. Like, that's, you know what I mean? And then I think, I don't know. Like,
who do you think should sit?
I think you could make the case for LeBron.
Why are you sitting? No.
I'm not saying sitting, but I don't think anyone should. I don't think Tatum should have gotten a DNP first and foremost. But you're gonna have to take minutes away from someone else. So when you look at Durant, you look at LeBron. I think they'll have to take minutes away. And then you got to say, where else can Tatum play? I don't know who else you're gonna.
So
take
I thought
minutes
he would
from.
Play over
maybe
Booker.
Embiid.
I thought he would play over Booker. Booker came out and played great in that game, so I don't think he's going anywhere at this point. The problem for Tatum is he didn't play well in the exhibitions, or at least up to his standards. He didn't shoot well. He didn't shoot many threes at all. And so you looked at his role in this roster, and you're like, all right, what does he do? Because LeBron has the ball in his hands. Booker gives you better shooting than Tatum, at least from three. And Tatum was mostly on offense, just standing around. He was doing all the little things.
Don't the numbers say that Tatum's a better catch-and-shoot three-point shooter than Booker?
He might be, but not so far through this warm-up slate into the first game. Yeah, well, he played in the exhibitions. The weird part to me, Dan, is he wasn't shooting threes, and that goes back to conversations we had in the playoffs about, all right, where's that shot? Where's his offense coming from on a consistent basis? On this team, it's a little more challenging for him because the ball is not in his hand, so he has to find a spot for it to come to him. Especially,
and they also don't need him to shoot threes, though. Like, especially if you're giving KD those minutes instead of Tatum. I think when they're looking at the shot creation, obviously in the Celtics rotation, you want Tatum to still take those threes, keep the defense honest, regardless if he's making them or not at a high clip. But KD will make them, and the defense has to play him at all levels. And I mean, I think Tatum's a great player, but KD is just a different animal when he's right. And I think they prioritize getting KD right in this game so that, you know, come the knockout stage, KD's not still trying to figure out how to get into the rotation, or he's not like overexerting himself, getting up to speed in South Sudan game. Like, they just threw him in this game. Maybe they scouted Serbia and said, this is a much easier matchup than any other teams that we're going to get. And we want to play this. We want to play KD here a bunch of minutes to get him right before those other games. I think that's Kerr's calculus, but I can understand being disappointed in it.
I also think they want to play more centers against Jokic, which is why they kept that Bam Davis thing going. And that's actually been the best thing about this team, is that double big combo. So if they're going to take that out of the mix in the next game here, Taylor, it's a different matchup. South Sudan doesn't have big centers like Jokic and whoever else was in that front court for Serbia. So this could work here, but you are messing with things again. You're tinkering a little bit, and I think your comparison's a good one, that you're just going to keep giving guys minutes based on a game because you're trying to get them in there. All of a sudden, you don't have a game plan or at least a consistent rotation at that point. And
yeah, well,
this is where it gets a little tricky to me. I don't know if someone can beat the U.S., but the U.S. can obviously beat themselves through dysfunction or inconsistency or just guys not knowing their roles.
Certainly, certainly. And I think if you look at, you know, this team and you look at, I mean, the 2012 team didn't really have these problems because everyone was pretty young and it was a pretty clear hierarchy at that point. But, you know, you think about the Dream Team, right? And you have like their two old guys at the time, right? Were Magic and Bird. Magic had been retired, right, at that point, and Bird was could barely walk. So you had your two old guys, right? Your two like representatives of the NBA, right? They're all representatives of the NBA, but you know what I mean? Like, they're two main, like, you know, Bird and Magic, but they're both old and they're not trying to play that much. Right. On this team, you have the two old guys, or the three,
you got three old guys. Yeah.
Right. And they're all starting and dominating. Right.
You so have the Embiid thing as well, which is another weird, like,
well, I mean,
he's not supposed to be part of this team.
Yeah. You already know how I feel about that. Like, we can just send him home and, you know,
well, like, I hate to say it without knowing it, but it seems pretty clear that they promised him that starting role, because they're not moving him from that. As bad as he's played, they seem to have no interest in getting away from him as the center, even though Davis has been a million times better than him.
Yeah, and that's where the whole like goodwill with Team USA thing comes into play for me, is because you have a guy like Embiid out there who's like, you know, doing his Embiid thing, which works in the NBA, but I don't know how well it works in FIBA, in international play, right? And he has nothing built up with Team USA. And then you have Tatum, who's been, you know, Team USA since what? Like, he was 15 years old, right?
He
and
was
I know
a big
you
part
can't
of that last run too.
Right. Like, and that's the more important one, right? You can put aside all the amateur stuff and just go straight to the last Olympics, right? Like, there's a bunch of stuff built up, and it just doesn't sit. And obviously, I'm a Celtics fan. Jason Tatum's my favorite player in the NBA. So, like, I'm going to feel differently. I'm going to feel more, you know, it's more charged up for me. But, like, it just doesn't sit super well with me for the coach to go to the guy before the game and be like, hey, you're not going to play today. And I saw some tweets that were like, you won by 26. You couldn't find him any minutes at the end of the game. I think it's better they just didn't play him. Because, like, I think it's worse if they're like, hey, we're up by 20 with 4 minutes left. Like, go get him. Right. Like,
no,
I'm glad
that
they were
just
like, yeah, like that's even worse than just not playing. And it's disappointing. You know, we'll see how it goes from here. Like, you know, I don't expect him to go take, you know, minutes from Kevin Durant. Right. I don't expect him to take minutes from LeBron in terms of, like, you know, dominating the ball. But, you know, it's just crazy to not have him out there at all.
Dan, what are you thinking about Tatum right now? Because to me, and we've talked about it for so long in the chat, on our shows, he's a champion now. And I think he proved a lot through that run in terms of how the width of his impact can make an imprint on a game and that team in particular. But it is something, Taylor, too. Drew and White are on this roster, and they're doing all the Drew and White things that they did for the Celtics. And they're actually, in the context of this roster, looking more important than Tatum on this group of guys, just because they're so focused and so good at piecing everything together. So I think it says a lot about how much they've helped Tatum and Brown get to where they are at this point. And so I'm still, even after the championship, even after everything he's shown individually and all the growth here, just trying to figure out, who is he? Where's he fit in on a night-to-night basis? What is he as a player? Because, I mean, you know, he does everything, but you don't know what his role is going to be on any given night, which I think is a good thing, because he can fit in if he's not scoring on defense. He can pass if he's getting swarmed by defenders. But it also lends itself to a little bit of inconsistency from him, too.
Yeah, I think you hit it right there. It can lead him to be a little inconsistent because he's multidimensional. You know, you see KD, I mean, he plays a little bit of defense, but at this point in his career, he's a pure scorer, and you know what you can generally expect from him on a night-in, night-out basis. And I think LeBron, similar thing. He's going to have the ball in his hand. He's going to facilitate. He'll get to the lane, and he'll play a little bit of defense. And I think that's the side of Tatum that can really make him a differentiator on this Team USA team. If he plays really good defense and does that consistently, I think that can really help him carve out a role. But I think in general, when I think about Tatum and then Team USA, it's, do they need him to win the gold medal? And I think, yeah, last Olympics, he definitely had an impact. But when you look here, it feels like his skill set is a little redundant when you have LeBron, when you have KD playing well, you have Booker, who's, you know, so far playing well. I think it makes you wonder that question of, do you need Tatum to win the gold medal? And I think obviously you want him on the roster. Obviously he'll help you win, but I don't think they need him as much as they need KD playing well, as they need LeBron playing well. And I think if those two weren't playing at this incredible level right now, we'd see Tatum getting more minutes. We'd see Tatum getting more touches. And I think that's honestly where Tatum is in his career. I don't think he's better overall than Kevin Durant. When Kevin Durant is right, I don't think he's better overall than LeBron when LeBron is right and healthy. And I think that's just who he is. And that's the logjam that we're seeing. But I don't think it means he's not a great player. I don't think it means he deserves a DNP. I think that's just where he is in general and where he is on this team. Now, I don't know if LeBron can keep this up throughout all of the Olympics. I don't even know if KD can keep it up. I mean, he went on like a 8-for-8 run where he was making every single shot. Like, it's not realistic for him to keep that up. And again, that's where Tatum comes in, because he can still score and he'll play better defense than both of those guys. So I think Tatum has a role. I'm not going to say, oh, this is overblown, like he's not good, they don't need him. I think that question can come up, but we'll see that they need Tatum on the team, and he's on the roster for a reason.
I'm looking forward to seeing what this game looks like here, because South Sudan gave them a run last time and they made a million shots. They were tough and they just played so hard the whole game in an exhibition setting, which is probably going to be a little different than what this looks like, especially after the wake-up call they got. So I could see the U.S. winning this one by a greater margin. But
Bob, can I ask you a question?
What
do you think that Tatum, because of the role he plays with the Celtics now, where he facilitates a lot of their offense, do you think that him progressing to that point has made it more difficult for him to like take a step back and fit into a smaller role?
Definitely. I think you saw him trying to figure out what his role was in those exhibition games, and it just put him to the side. He wasn't aggressive enough. And I don't know whether that came down to him not being able to take advantage of one-on-one matchups, because he had a couple opportunities where he could. But he just looked like he was standing in the corner. He couldn't take advantage of extra defenders thrown his way because they didn't come his way. That you can't double-team Tatum in this setting because there's so many other guys you have to account for. And the three's not there right now. And he didn't take many again. But yeah, he went 0-for-6. And I think that was probably the biggest reason they sat him down, because they sat Halliburton down too, who went 28% from three in those exhibition games. So I think they wanted the most shooting possible because they're playing so big.
I was just thinking that because it's like, you look at the 21 Olympics, and 21 Olympics come right after like Tatum put up, I think, 4 50-point games that season, or 3 50-point games in the season before. And so he was like, because Jaylen was hurt for the last stretch of that year, and that's the year that Tatum really, now I guess it was the second year, he really took off. But he was like scoring at a much more, I guess, aggressive clip than he is now. And you're right, like his best quality right now is that he lets the game come to him, and I guess when you're you're playing a role with LeBron and Kevin Durant, the game really doesn't, you don't even get an opportunity to let the game come to you, right? You just, like you said, you have to go stand in the corner. So, you know, I don't want to act like I can't understand why his role is limited. I just, you know, to circle back to the main point, just like,
he's really hard to discuss right now.
Yeah. The DNP before the game to me is just like, what are we,
the way they went about it was pretty disrespectful. I can't disagree with that. And I understand why people are upset about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, Tatum didn't threaten to beat the shit out of Steve Kerr like someone else would have.
You also have Edwards here. That's something else we could talk about, but we'll save that for another time because I do want to hit on baseball first. Quick sponsor shout outs, Prize Picks. Go to Prize Picks this summer. Use the code CLNS. Got 100% deposit match up to $100. It's our daily fantasy partner. Pick two or more players, pick more or less on their stat projections, and you got your team. Went up to many times your money over there at Prize Picks. Use the code CLNS. Game Time, been using them a lot this summer. Just went to Sarah over the weekend, Schoolboy Q as well. And baseball games start this summer. Great deals on Game Time, and they're giving you $20 off for your first purchase over there with the code CLNS. Terms apply. Go to the Game Time app today. Great features, flash deals, panoramic views of your seats. Love Game Time. And HelloFresh, been cooking with HelloFresh as well. They'll throw in free appetizers for life while you're subscribed over at HelloFresh.com/garden apps. Customizable delivery dates, meal choices, seasonal recipes as well. And it's all laid out and prepackaged for you in the box when it arrives to your door. Love HelloFresh. Go to HelloFresh.com/garden apps. And yeah, thanks to all our sponsors here, Dome Theory, CLNS, and the Garden Report. Baseball time. I've tried to get excited, invested in this Red Sox team. This season's been better so far than recent seasons. But here I am, Taylor, still frustrated, worried about the holes on the roster. They're outside the playoff picture looking in right now, but they're still close. And they were so good going into the deadline, but they blow three games against the Dodgers, blow a game against the Yankees with two strikes, two outs in the ninth, and then go on to get destroyed by the Rockies, which was as concerning as anything else. And then they go into this deadline and they do a few things, but not enough to make you say they're going to the playoffs. And so I think going to the playoffs is important for the group of players they have here. I think it's important for just the trajectory of this team. And I always just want to see them in the playoffs because that, if you get in, you can go far. That's just how it goes in this sport now. And they just continue to not give themselves a chance. And, you know, Dan, your team went out. They made some big moves, especially Jazz Chisholm. The Red Sox, to me, we're talking about, like, batted ball rate and the extension and this and that, and I'm looking at the stats of these guys they bring in and they're not good, and I just still feel like these are major leaguers, right, Taylor, these guys they bring in?
Yeah,
but it still feels like they're just going for undervalued guys who they can acquire for cheap, and they still don't have the real major league talent on this roster to compete at the highest level, and they're the Red Sox, and I just expect them to have that. That's where I am. I still think they're more likely to miss the playoffs today than they are to make it. And if they miss it, it's going to be really frustrating because they're right there, Taylor. They were above a group of teams that were in the wild card race a couple weeks ago, and now they're on the outside looking in again.
I mean, they were above one team in the wild card race.
And the Royals, right?
Game above them right now. So, yeah. Like, going into the deadline, what we wanted was a starter or two, right? Relievers and a right-handed bat. And technically, they got those things, right? In Paxton, Garcia, Ramirez, Sims, and then Jansen as the right-handed bat. And then you flip, you know, Nick York for Quinn Priester, which is more of a turning a young position
future-oriented
player,
role.
Yeah, into a young pitcher. I said this earlier to you, Bob, and to everyone else, but I'm like not thrilled by the deadline, right? Like I'm not like, oh my God, Luis Garcia. They got Luis Garcia, man, right? Like, that's not how
I'm
feeling.
And, you know,
this,
I don't want
this year to me feels so much different than 22 or 23. 22, you're dealing with the aftermath of 21, and you have a lot of the 2018 team left, right? And then 23 was a weird transition. We had a lot of vets on one-year deals, like Adam Duvall and Justin Turner, and even like a James Paxton, right? You had these guys who we knew weren't going to be there at the end. I think this year is different. Because, like, most of the guys like in their starting lineup are going to be here for the foreseeable future unless they're traded for something else, right? Like you have catcher filled, you have third base filled, you have left field filled, you have center field, right field, first base, and you know, your DH is under contract. Whether or not Yoshida's going to be there or not, who knows, right? I think that's why it feels different to me. I wish they had done a little more. I think that my heart wanted a bigger name, right? My heart wants the bigger name. My heart wants to go get, you know, Terry Skubel is probably out of the question, but my heart wants a Garrett Crochet. My heart wants a Flaherty. My heart wants, you know, if you can, you know, pry someone away from someone who doesn't really, you know, another team who doesn't really want to trade someone, but, you know, you sweeten the deal enough, right? I said this earlier too. If there had been more movement of like real deal players at the deadline, and this is what the Red Sox came away with, I would be way more upset than I am now. Right. If Crochet had gone and Skubal had gone and Renjifo had gone and Brent Rooker had gone and all these guys that we've talked about for weeks had actually been traded and the Red Sox didn't end up with anyone, you know, out of that pot of players, then I would have been way more frustrated than I am now. But I mean, like, you look at the price for some of these relief pitchers. I mean, the Red Sox sent 4 players for Luis Garcia. They sent 3 players for Danny Jansen. You're looking around the league. I mean, the Yankees sent out 3 prospects for Jazz Chisholm. The Astros last night sent three players for Yusei Kikuchi from Toronto. So the prices were high this year, and those real deal impact players that we were looking at didn't really go anywhere. But I think you're right. I think it would be important for this group specifically, for Connor Wong and Jaron Duran and Rafaela and Willier Abreu and Tristan Casas when he's back, and even Houck and Crawford. Like, it would be so important for these guys to make the playoffs and play an important role in making the playoffs, because then they know what it's like, right? Like in 2016, right? That was the first time that, you know, Mookie Betts but Mookie Betts and, you know, Jackie Bradley to an extent and all them, that was the first time they had really made the playoffs. And did they get swept in the first round? Yes, right? But then you go back in 17 and you win a game against Houston in the first round, and then you go in 18 and you're stacked, right? And you win the World Series. You don't go past 5 games in any series. So I think you're right in the sense that it's important for them to make the playoffs, because that should be the expectation every year, especially when you have the financial capabilities that the Boston Red Sox have. But for this team specifically, I think it's important for these players to get to the playoffs knowing that they're the ones who did it, right? It's not like Willier Abreu has been hanging out on the bench all year and they make the playoffs and it's like, oh yeah, I made the playoffs. It's like, no, he would be playing an impact role. Same goes for Duran and Rafaela. So I'm disappointed in the sense that my heart wanted a bigger name. When I think about it more, I'm okay with what they did. You know, I grade it like a C, a B minus, something somewhere in that range.
C feels right. Yeah.
Right now, their Fangraphs like playoff projection says they're 43% to make the playoffs. So it's close.
Sounds right.
It feels perfectly right. And, you know, Kansas City's in front of them.
The schedule's hard.
The game of Seattle. You know, the Yankees are right there. We just had that series with the Yankees. So it's complicated. It's not a cut and dry matter, but, you know, I'm just like right down the middle with this deadline. I think they filled the holes they needed, but you know, you always would have liked to see, you know, someone a little better.
Yeah. And kind of along those lines, I think the Yankees and the Red Sox, they're in different situations. I know the last series, make what you want of it, but Yankees are in a win now mode. Red Sox, you could make the playoffs. As you said, there's value in these guys getting some playoff experience, but you don't want to broker your future on a guy, for example, Jack Flaherty. He was sort of the top sort of starter on available, and they ended up giving up their number 3 prospect, the Dodgers did. So you can make that move if you're the Dodgers. You're in win now. I think the Yankees could have made a similar move. I was cautioning, you know, against them doing something like that, just on my opinion of Jack Flaherty. But if you're in a win now mode, you go after those big guys. I don't think the Red Sox were in that mode yet. And I think what helps them get to that mode is simply making the playoffs. And I think, like Taylor said, they plugged the holes that needed to be filled. I think you look at the overall roster, top to bottom, there's not really something out there that could have made them win now that was available that wouldn't have taken so many prospects. I can't really think of a name that was available that could have put the Red Sox in a win now mode. So I think they played it right. Increase your chances of making the playoffs. That's the goal. From the Yankees' perspective, I know, you know, Jazz Chisholm, you want to say it was a big trade, but he didn't really cost that much. And with what he costed, we still had prospects to go get another guy to win now. And I think that's why I'm a little bit disappointed, because we got Jazz and, you know, we see Tanner Scott from the Marlins go off the board, basically one of the top closers that was actually available, unlike Mason Miller, and we didn't get him. And I think I'm a little bit more disappointed than I would expect Red Sox fans to be, because we're in win now. We had the prospects to win now. And you have Soto in a walk year. You have Judge playing out of his mind. And Garrett Cole today, now out. Fatigue. And we look at the rotation. We don't even have Garrett Cole, right? We're now relying on Luis Gil and Carlos Rodon. That's our rotation. And okay, if our rotation's shaky, we needed bullpen pieces. We didn't get either. And I know we kind of tinkered here and there, but we played basically the same strategy as the Red Sox did, but the Red Sox aren't in win now. And I think that's why I'm a little bit disappointed. So I expected more. I think it was pretty clear they needed to do more. And they had the prospects to do so. I was really happy about the Jazz Chisholm trade, because I thought it meant Cashman was going to go do more, and he didn't. It must have meant the price was too high. I have to assume that's what it meant. But if not, I definitely think this offseason, there's going to be a lot of big questions if we don't go far in the playoffs or win the World Series.
Well, here's the difference between the two teams right now. And yeah, as I've said, Red Sox have owned the Yankees, which has kind of been my silver lining in the last handful of years. Up until this weekend.
Yeah, but always say that. You're like, the Red Sox own the Yankees, and then the Yankees will take a few games back. And you're like, no, not those games, though.
Exactly.
Well, those were during the collapse. And I hope this deadline, at the very least, saved the Red Sox from collapse, because they were heading in that direction. The bullpen was about to die. The starters desperately needed help, and they gave them a little bit. So I hope that at least keeps them in the mix. So they threw themselves a life preserver here. But the big difference between the two teams right now, and I went to Yankee Stadium on afternoon game, wasn't a lot of buzz. But when I watched that team, that's a team, man. They got some buzz. They got some star power. The Soto move gave them that. And yes, they need more, but they're in position to win the World Series this year. I still feel like, Taylor, if you made one or two more additions, and it didn't even have to be at this deadline, because I know it's tougher to make moves at the deadline, but I still hate the way they punted the winter. They didn't do anything in the winter effectively. They got a few decent additions. They put themselves in a similar position this year to where they were the last handful of years. But the Red Sox can't win the World Series this year. And to me, when you have the core pieces they have, when you have the manager they have, when you're the Red Sox, you should be in the mix. There should be a scenario where you can win it, or at least go to the ALCS, go to the World Series. And we're sitting here today saying it's a coin flip if they even make the playoffs. And that'll be 5 years out of six that they've missed the playoffs. We've never seen
Bobby,
that,
Taylor. It's been this way our whole life. You act like it hasn't, but it has. Right? So we come into consciousness.
5 out of 6 years?
We were 6 years old in 2004, right? They missed the playoffs. They got swept in the first round in 05, missed in 06, right? You win the World Series. Like, they have done this our whole life. Their two best back-to-back seasons ever were 07 and 08. That puts us at 9 years old and 10 years old. For their two best back-to-back seasons ever, right? Like, they win the division three times in a row, 16, 17, 18. But besides that, this is their MO. Like, they've spent big and it's not worked, right? In 2011, they had a stacked team and they had, like, maybe the worst collapse in MLB history in the month of September, right? Like, they've had plenty of teams where they've spent big money and it doesn't work out. And I agree with you, because you and I were – we don't usually agree on any Red Sox topics, but this offseason, you and I both wanted to add two starters and, you know, an impact player.
And they traded a starter. And what is he now? The favorite to win NL Cy Young.
I don't care. I would have cut him outright.
I think you made a good point, Bobby, in that you to be win now or to even be thinking about becoming win now at the deadline, you had to have been coming into the season thinking you could have made the playoffs. And I don't think you guys came into it thinking,
no, yeah, I for thought sure, they were going to be dead last.
Playoffs. Right. So I think you're saying it's a coin flip they make the playoffs, but I don't even think you thought that could have been the case coming into the season. At least Bobby, I don't think you did. Taylor, I think you're a little bit more optimistic on the team, but right moves in the winter.
No.
They didn't do it.
Last year before the season, I put money on them to make the playoffs, right? And then in the middle of the year, when they swept Atlanta in July last year, I put even more money on them to win the division. Did I win either bet? No, I didn't.
And this year could go the same exact way. And we're going to be sitting there.
It could, but the difference, Bobby, is that when you look around the field, it is now guys that you can see being here for the future, right? Like you have, I mean, outside of Devers, right? Devers is the longest tenured position player, right? And he's 27 years old, right? So he's still young. He's still young. So then you have
the Durant thing this year is a big revelation.
Connor Wong in his second full season in the bigs, right? Sadon Rafaela, first full season. William Abreu, first full season. Jaren Duran, first full season, right? Yoshida. Like he didn't start. He didn't
start. We know they can hit Taylor. We know they can hit. It's all about the pitching.
So, exactly. And the way that they have acquired pitching for our whole life is to trade for it, right? Like they haven't really hit on a pitcher since John Lester in a really big way, in a meaningful way. So I agree with you. Going into this offseason, if Tarek Skubal is on the block, right, and you can move one of your top prospects and in position players and however you need to do it, right, if he's there, you have to make that move, right? If Garrett Crochet, if the White Sox figure out a contract extension with him, right, to make him put him in a more favorable place so he's not, you know, because he kind of held both the White Sox and the rest of the league hostage this year, right, at the deadline. He was like, yeah, I need a contract extension if I want to pitch in the playoffs. And now he's pretty much guaranteed to not have either of those two things, right? So, like, I think if the move is there in the offseason, you have to make it because that's always how they've acquired pitching. But I think this season has been important in a couple different ways. You've let your guys at the big league level develop and get the actual reps they need to develop. And also it's been a great year for like Kyle Teo, Marcelo Meyer, Roman Anthony to kind of like, I mean, Roman Anthony was like always going up and then, you know, Kyle Teo drafted last year. He had great stock last year, but like Meyer had a rough year last year because of his shoulder injury. And now he's back at like, you know, one of the top prospects in baseball. So it's been a good year for them to at least pick a direction and keep and move forward. It's not this like, hey, we have Justin Turner and Adam Duvall carrying our offense for a month in the summer when both these guys are like one's 35 and one's almost 40 and they're not going to be here next year, right? Like the guys carrying the offense right now are Duran, you know, Devers, Abreu's there. Yoshida's like heating up right now. O'Neill, it's his last year. He's still in his 20s, so maybe they look to extend him. Maybe they look to extend him. He's a great right-handed bat. I think he kind of fits with the Red Sox really well right now. But this is a direction, right? You're moving forward. You're establishing a core of major league players who are young, and you have like a pretty decent-sized wave of prospects coming who are like projected to be better than all the guys who are already on the team. So you're in a decent spot that way. But at the same time, I agree with you in the sense that like it is a pain in the ass every year to be like, you know, to have the 2 weeks before the All-Star break seemingly determine, or the 2 weeks after the All-Star break determine their direction at the deadline. I don't love that. I hope that changes, you know, and again, they're going to have sales money will come off the books this winter, you know, Giolito, whether he opts in, right, he could come off the books. So then you have even more space with a better team and a better farm system moving forward. But I also agree with you that, you know, I want them to make the playoffs this year. And right now, Nesson's showing Breslow and John Henry talking right now. And hopefully it's like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
what do they see? It's frustrating because I just look at what could have been. Giolito, another flop of a move. Sale, move didn't work, at least yet. We'll see how it goes long term. But those moves set you back, and they're preventing you right now. The sale move doesn't set you back. This year it did. There's no way around saying that it
no, there's plenty of ways to say it didn't.
I mean,
you can't wait around for a guy for a fifth season in a row.
Right. I think they made the right decision. It just doesn't look like it. Now that he's playing well, it doesn't look like the right decision. But
he didn't get anything for him.
You have to also say, like, you sat and waited for him to get right again, and you were going to eat all this contract. At least you're not taking all that salary. And again, it comes off the books this offseason. I think the way you look at it is future focus, regardless of if you make the playoffs this year or not. You'll be in a great position this winter, as Taylor said,
to trade
for an impact piece. You get your prospects, you know, either you're calling up prospects to join the team, and you have a better sense of the roster in general. It's not like all these pieces, you don't know who's going to play what position. You're starting to figure that stuff out. And you're also knowing one, you have more salary to work with. And two, you have young guys in the right position who are playing well. Like someone like Durant, you didn't expect that this year. And, you know, the rotation's still a bit of an issue that you'll need to figure out, but you have prospects to sort of address that. I think one thing in general that even from a Yankees fan perspective, I think the deadline this year and ever since really expanding the wild card, it's really hard to get those big trades done because so many teams think they're still in it. And for the guys that like the Rockies, for example, who aren't in it, they can drive up an incredible price for anyone that they have on their team that other teams want. And I think that just makes it really difficult to say, yeah, we're going to turn things around at the deadline. In the winter, though, when all's said and done, you know, wow, we're really not good and we weren't good and we have these players that we need to shake things up. I think that's where you really need to make your progress. And the Yankees did that with Soto this past offseason. I think the Sox are set up to do something similar this year.
I'm interested to see how it goes. Hope Sox make the playoffs. Yankees, can they get back into World Series contention? I still am skeptical of them. Dan has his own questions, but they've made some moves here that could potentially get them back on track, and they have been back on track. And then, of course, the Dodgers, if Nate was here. They're all in. They got to win it. I'm going to make fun of them a lot if they don't, and I don't think they're going to. So we'll see what happens the rest of the way. I'm going away. These guys might do some episodes while I'm gone. I might tune in from Paris, but I'm heading to Europe. So we'll talk football. We'll talk baseball stretch run. We'll talk basketball as it starts to ramp up a little bit when I get back here. But thanks for listening. As always, go subscribe, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts. He's Taylor McLeod. Check him out on The Cap. They just reviewed the Mustard album, which I was listening to Taylor. I was actually a little disappointed. Not Like Us wasn't on there. I would have liked to have heard it. I think it would have been great. Just keep putting in people's face.
Hey, who knows? Who knows? Maybe Kendrick didn't let him, man. Maybe this is all farce. This guy, you know? No, I'm kidding. I was happy. I'm so obviously on the review. I said I was like happy it wasn't there because it allowed Mustard to keep the album, his album, and not have it be Not Like Us at the top. And then all the rest of the songs that he worked much longer on, you know, be like, yeah, okay, whatever, man. We're going to skip all the stuff that you worked actually hard on and that means something to you to listen to the song we've already been listening to for months. But, you know, I understand why you put
the remix. I'm still waiting on the remix, but we'll talk about that if it ever comes. Dan, thanks for being here. And that's that. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks here. Dome Theory. Stay tuned for more episodes.